Transmitting live from the top of the Empire State Building on WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio in New York, this is Trump Watch, a weekly series investigating the actions of and reactions to President Donald J. Trump and his administration. I'm today's host, Paul DiRienzo.
Conrad, Tokyo, Sparrow, Pistachio, just a national, dog is on sabbatical, rather watch an intention, politician, politician.
Remember two great cities in a distant foreign land, when scorched from the face of earth their power of Japan. Be careful, my dear brother, don't take away the joy, but use it for the good of man and never to destroy. Atomic power, atomic power, was given by the mighty hand of God. Atomic power, atomic power, it was given by the mighty hand of God.
And that is the Buchanan Brothers and their big hit from 1954. I believe, or thereabouts, Atomic Power. And, of course, that might clue the listeners into the fact that today's show is going to be talking about atomic power. And one would say, what does Trump Watch have to do with atomic power or atomic power in the general broad sort of sense, not just power plants, but the control and power inherent in the atom, which could be used to destroy as well as for good. And so what does this have to do with Donald Trump? And so, well, he does have a guy who follows him around everywhere he goes with the football, which allows him to access the codes necessary to fire nuclear missiles in some sort of, we hope never happens, conflagration, Dr. Strangelovian world and of nuclear winter and millions, if not billions, dead. We hope very much that our leaders of both the two countries in the world that could really visit such destruction on humanity, Russia and the United States, to find some detente between them to prevent such a thing from ever coming close. And unfortunate to say, it has come close on occasion. And I guess 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis, was the scariest time when the missiles were unsheathed and ready to be fired. And only by, as the Buchanan brothers sang, the grace of God, go forth I. And we are live today to talk about it as history and to watch movies about it. How exciting it was. Joining me from New Mexico is the director of the Nuclear Waste Program of the Southwest Research and Information Center based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's Don Hancock, and I'd like to welcome him to our air. Welcome, Don Hancock.
Hello. How are you today?
Great, great. Glad to have you on. And we've talked before on this issue, and you're a font of information down there based sort of in the middle of some of the biggest labs, or a couple of the biggest labs and other facilities associated with the nuclear weapons complex, I guess they call it now, the National Nuclear Weapons Complex. Is that what they call that now?
It goes by different names, but there are three major nuclear weapons laboratories in the United States that the Department of Energy has. Two, as you say, are in New Mexico, Los Alamos National Lab and Sandia National Lab. The third one is in California, the Lawrence Livermore Lab in the Bay Area. Those labs do all the designing of all of our nuclear weapons and both the nuclear parts and the non-nuclear parts of bombs. And so that's kind of the center. Those three labs are kind of the center of that part of the nuclear weapons complex. So that's not all of the nuclear weapons complex, but those are the three key components to it. The complex couldn't be alive without them.
So they do important work. I sort of know the answer to some of the questions I'm asking, but for the benefit of the listeners, we want to really get people up to speed, because this is not something that's really talked about in the media as much as probably should be, considering the importance of it, the ability to destroy the world, for example. What exactly are nuclear weapons and why should be we worried about them?
Well, nuclear weapons were two nuclear bombs were used at the end of World War II on Japan and Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So they nuclear weapons were created to sort of take war fighting to the next level, where you could have enormous destruction of large population areas with a few weapons. Of course, during the Cold War, after World War II, as you mentioned in your introduction, the United States and Russia got into a nuclear weapons race to create, and each of the nations in the late 40s and 1950s and 60s and 70s and up till the 80s created literally tens of thousands of nuclear weapons. If even a fraction of them would have been used, essentially the globe would have been destroyed. You mentioned nuclear winter. Lots of people would be killed. One of the important aspects of nuclear weapons is not only their immediate killing power, because they can literally vaporize people immediately, as they did in Japan, but through the fallout that the weapons create, the effects of the nuclear explosions get up into the air and go around the world. And so essentially there are essentially no places on Earth that haven't been affected by the use and testing of nuclear weapons. There were two weapons that were used in Japan, but there have been hundreds of weapons that were tested in the atmosphere, again, primarily by the U.S. and Russia, although Britain and France and India and Pakistan have also done testing, and more recently North Korea. So the fallout from the testing of the weapons has gotten into the atmosphere and therefore deposits over much of the world in differing quantities radioactive fallout. So nuclear weapons are an extraordinarily destructive force in terms of their ability to kill lots of people, make major changes in the Earth, not only in population, but environmentally, through using just a fraction of the weapons that we had. And unfortunately, we still have a lot, although both U.S. and Russia have reduced their stockpiles through various treaties that we have had over the years. We still have, U.S. and Russia each have several thousand nuclear weapons that are able to be used at any point in time. So the destruction of people and the Earth would be catastrophic if even some of them were used.
I see, Don Hancock. And so a sobering thought for sure, and something that should get more debate and more discussion possibly. What the Department of Energy, a cabinet-level position, is the department that seems to have the most control over nuclear weapons outside of the Department of Defense. What has been the political, starting with Obama, as far back as you'd like to go, but I'm looking at really a comparison of what was going on under Obama as far as this complex and how that's continued or discontinued under the Trump administration.
Well, unfortunately, there's not as much difference in actions and funding and activities between the two administrations, as there has been difference in the rhetoric. One of the first speeches President Obama made in 2009, and some of your listeners will remember he even got a Nobel Peace Prize for it, is talking about the goal of ridding the world of nuclear weapons. And he and Russia did negotiate what's called the New START Treaty, which will over time have relatively small reductions in the weapons that both the U.S. and Russia have. But part of what he went along with for getting the New START treaty was to commitment and starting a multi-decade process to invest essentially $1 trillion of taxpayer dollars, that's trillion with a T, to kind of reconstruct the complex. So Obama sort of started this $1 trillion rebuilding of the complex. The Trump administration, of course, has only been in power for less than 6 months, but
seems like
they
six
are
years
proposing they times. Are proposing to accelerate the spending and the rate of rebuilding our nuclear weapons complex and creating more nuclear weapons on top of those that we have that we don't need.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the rhetoric has been different in so far as at various times President Trump has talked about, potentially even more the possibility of using nuclear weapons, which so the rhetoric is fairly different between the Obama administration and the Trump administration. The activities not so different up to now in terms of promoting the complex, spending literally billions of dollars of taxpayer money on the complex, maintaining these very dangerous nuclear weapons. And the other point about nuclear weapons is they're very dangerous even when they're not used, because the both the radioactive and the chemical materials in them are very dangerous, and people, workers working with them, can be exposed and get sick or die. And because of how dirty the complex is, there's environmental contamination that affects people not only at the sites but in the surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, a chilling scenario you're laying out that we actually exist in right now. So there's thousands of weapons. Russia and the United States hold them, but at the same time, there doesn't seem the same kind of saber rattling. But now we have a president, and just to sum up what I think I'm hearing, is that now we have a president who actually, while continuing basically the policies of his Democratic predecessor, has upped the ante as far as the rhetoric, actually threatening to use these things. And what that raises to me is the question of, is he a fool? Is he crazy? Is there a rationale behind saying things like that? And what chance are they of actually really being used in this era?
Well, I hope the chances of them being used are very minimal. There are people in the government who understand the catastrophic consequences of using nuclear weapons. It's hard to tell how much President Trump himself appreciates that, and as we've already said, some of his rhetoric would tend to indicate not so much. But one would hope that that they would not be used, and he would pay some attention to some of his advisors who would say, no, this is not a good idea. Hopefully we will never see that happen. One of the difficult things is that, you know, we don't know. You mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis. We don't know when there could be a crisis now between the U.S. and Russia, or the U.S. and North Korea, or another place that is very worrisome, not because they have the number of weapons that the U.S. and Russia do, but two countries that are pretty constantly in a near state of war, India and Pakistan. So we need both better rhetoric and better actions that say, you know, this is not a good idea. It's important to say, I mean, you're in New York, and an important thing is going on and has been going on in New York now, which is an international conference under the auspices of the United Nations to come up with a treaty to ban nuclear weapons. So there are more than 120 countries in the world that have people there trying to negotiate such a treaty. neither the U.S. or Russia are participating in this treaty, and nor the other nuclear weapon states are not either.
So all the countries without nuclear weapons might ban them amongst themselves, but the ones that have them, it's another story.
Exactly. But the idea, and the people working on the treaty, the governments working on the treaty, are not naive to think that they can pass a treaty to ban nuclear weapons and the nuclear countries are going to abide by it. But among the goals of the treaty are to help to clearly establish an international law that having nuclear weapons itself, not only using nuclear weapons, is contrary to international law and morality. So hoping that over time that will have some influence both in the public debate in this country and around the world, but also over time potentially with political leaders in the United States and other places. So the point I want to make, where this first part we've been talking about very difficult situations, I don't want to leave the impression that people in the United States and indeed people around the world aren't working to try to prevent the kinds of bad things from happening that we've been talking about.
Right. So there are organizations such as your own, the Southwest Research and Information Center in Albuquerque. Tell me a little bit about your organization. You're the director of nuclear waste. We haven't really talked about nuclear waste yet. What does your group do in Albuquerque, and what's your focus on nuclear waste, and how does that fit into this?
So we're 46-year-old nonprofit organization that works on a variety of natural resources, environmental health, and justice issues. There are many organizations that spend much more time and effort on trying to get rid of nuclear weapons than we do. The reason we got involved with nuclear waste, though, so many years ago, is in the early 70s, not long after the organization was founded, the federal government, at the time it was the Atomic Energy Commission, came to New Mexico and said the world's first underground nuclear waste dump site repository would be in New Mexico. So people in New Mexico who already had Los Alamos, had the Trinity site where the first atomic bomb was tested before the bombs were used the following month in Japan, as we've already talked about. So New Mexico already had some nuclear weapons and had Los Alamos and Sandia labs, but you know, then people were told, and we're going to dump a lot of our waste in New Mexico. So people got interested in that. So we've been looking at both the specific issue of nuclear weapons waste coming to New Mexico and the broader issues of not only nuclear weapons waste, but nuclear power waste and their impacts where they are, at power plants and at DOE nuclear weapons sites, and at places that there are proposals to dump them. And so there are active proposals to create more waste, not only create more waste, but put it in more places, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
One of the sites is very interesting, the story of, and we've discussed this before, the waste isolation pilot plant, which is located in New Mexico. And the whole story, I don't know if our listeners really, I've been trying to tell it to as many people as I can, but I feel like a gnat on a elephant. Nobody else is really covering it, and nobody really knows the incredible tale of the waste isolation pilot plant and the mispacked kitty litter nuclear waste from Los Alamos that did the better part of $1 billion worth of damage in a matter of minutes.
Correct, and that happened in 2014. We're now more than 3 years later, and as you say, it's cost the taxpayers $1 billion. It's going to cost it more than that, because since the facility has been trying to reopen, and it's reopened on a small scale, and the idea is to continue for it to be used for a number of years.
Can we go back for a minute, please, and just describe what happened? I mean, I think people really haven't heard this story, and not as many people as should have heard it. What happened in 1914? I'm sorry, 2014, and the with the waste isolation pilot plant. What exactly is it, and what happened to it?
So it's a think of it as a salt mine that has a lot of nuclear waste in it. So the waste is brought from various places around the country on trucks through more than 20 states to get it to southeastern New Mexico. It's then taken from the surface 2,150 feet underground, and that was going on since 1999. More than 11,000 shipments, truck shipments of waste.
How long was it supposed to hold that waste for?
10,000 years without any releases.
you're not trying to be funny.
Less than 15 years after it opened, it had a significant release, not only in the underground, contaminating the underground, but also on the surface. So we don't actually really know for sure what happened. There have been various investigations to try to figure out what happened, but we know one or more drums that were packaged at Los Alamos of waste that's created at Los Alamos, one of these lab sites, and then brought to WIPP. We know one or more of the drums exploded and contaminated a significant portion of the underground, more than 8,000 linear feet, in other words, well over a mile and a half of underground tunnels at the WIPP site were and are contaminated with radioactive materials. Some of that came up from 2,150 feet below the surface, up to the surface and out into the environment. 15 workers who were at the site when this release happened on a Friday night were contaminated. Seven more workers that came the following day when the Department of Energy was saying that there hadn't actually been any release of radioactivity were also contaminated. So you have workers contaminated, you have the site contaminated, you have the site shut down for 3 years totally while various things were done to try to say it could be reopened, even though it's still greatly contaminated. So we have this.
Was it kitty litter? Is that still the same story?
Some of the waste that Los Alamos uses is, so part of what happens in terms of creating nuclear weapons materials is using acids, in this case nitric acid, as part of the process. And so then you have residues of nitric acids mixed in with various kinds of waste at the Los Alamos production facility. So when you have acids, you don't want to chemically then put things in it that can create an acid reaction or a chemical reaction. Los Alamos knows better than to do that, but for a variety of reasons, some of which we know and some of which we can surmise, a number of containers at Los Alamos that had the nitrate salts also had put in it an organic kitty litter. Why do you put kitty litter in with acids? Well, kitty litter, as people who have cats know, absorbs liquids. So they wanted to absorb that nitric acid, but when you get the wrong kind of absorbers in, rather than absorbing or in addition to absorbing, it can have a chemical reaction. So that's currently the Los Alamos explanation of why it happened.
Between inorganic and inorganic.
Inorganic versus organic.
Allegedly the instructions were to pack it in organic, and somebody misread that as inorganic or the opposite.
Right, exactly, the opposite. But again, there were dozens of containers of very similar waste that were packaged the same way. Some of those containers are still at Los Alamos, some are at WIPP, and some are at another site, Waste Control Specialists in Texas. So far as we know, only some of the containers at WIPP have blown up, and containers at the other places haven't. So the combination of kitty litter and nitrate salts doesn't always result in an explosion. So that's why I say the current explanation is that this was, an error, that they knew better, of, and but you know, in nuclear activities and lots of other activities, you're supposed to have lots of checks and balances. So there were lots of people at Los Alamos and lots of people at WIP that knew not to do this kind of packaging, and yet it happened anyway. So it wasn't just somebody misread the instructions and did things wrong. Numerous other people who should have been checking that and prevent it from happening also didn't do their job.
Well, that we have a minute left, or a minute or two left, and we're speaking with Don Hancock, who's the nuclear waste program director at the Southwest Research and Information Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We're finishing up next couple of minutes. I want to give you a chance just to sum up where we're at. I mean, under the Trump administration, can we sleep at night, or is it like the Cold War all over again? What do you think?
Well, I think the thing that's important is, and you've talked about this in other contexts, it's important for people to be informed and involved to counteract wrong statements and wrong actions that are being made. So people in New York that can, and your listeners who can think, well, we're a long ways from New Mexico or California where the worst of this stuff is happening, but your tax dollars are being used to perpetuate this in the Trump administration. Your congressmen and senators should be saying, no, let's not do this. Let's not spend this kind of money. Let's start moving away from nuclear weapons. Let's start understanding that they are a great health and environmental hazard, whether they're used or not, and the idea of spending $1 trillion to create more weapons makes no sense from an international standpoint, from a U.S. taxpayer standpoint, and from an environmental standpoint.
Thank you very much.
I encourage people to be involved as you're doing, to watch what the president and the administration and Congress are doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Don Hancock, Southwest Research and Information Center. You can find them on the Internet. I'm Paul DiRienzo. This has been Trump Watch. We'll see you next week. You want to get in touch with me, find my SoundCloud. Just search Paul DiRienzo, WBAI. Check out my show on Manhattan Neighborhood Network on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. And, again, I'll see you next week.